Great to be joined by Wayne Wallingford, 27th District Senator from Cape Girardeau, and we didn't catch up with Wayne last week. I was actually where he resides in Jefferson City for a few days, and Wayne was in Chicago at a tax and fiscal conference, and Wayne, there were kind of select legislators throughout the country that attended this conference. What did you learn?
Yes, it was a great conference. We had 25 people there, and we represented probably about 10 Midwestern states. I was the only one from Missouri, but other states had a few more. Obviously, it was in Illinois, so there were several from there, and a few from Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan and that. But it was really good because we're, you know, looking at the federal tax reform and how that affects each state, because there's going to have to be tax laws in each state that, you know, potentially have to be changed. Of course, particularly the high tax states like California and New York, of course, they weren't representative there, and going through those issues, and talked a lot about the, you know, highway infrastructure as well, because Missouri, as you know, is experiencing a lot of difficulty maintaining all of our highways and bridges. But we're not the only state with that problem. It's just that we have quite a bit more roads and bridges than most states, but every state is experiencing the same difficulty. So they were discussing different ways to fund that, and particularly with all the electric cars coming on board, which don't use gasoline at all, but do use the highways. So there's a lot of debate on how to do that. And interesting to find out that every 5 years, we spend more on the highways than the original, I think it was $48 billion to construct the interstate highway system. And every 5 years, we spend that much on it. So it's you know, a big problem that needs to be maintained, but is expensive to maintain.
So at the conference then, did you just kind of get educated and get background information, or do you feel like you picked up some things that you could kind of take back in a more immediate fashion to the legislature?
Yeah, well, one thing they discussed that I don't really like myself at all, and I haven't heard it mentioned in Missouri, but it'll probably be creeping over here, but other states are looking at it, and that's charging, because this way they would get the electric cars in this one, is to charge, and they figured out, you know, it's approximately a range of maybe 4 to 8 cents per mile. So if you drove your car, they would have odometer readings on your car through a GPS system, and that's why I don't like it. It's Big Brother, so I'm not a big fan of this. But they would say, okay, you drove on the highways this year 12,000 miles, and you owe us, you know, anywhere from 4 cents to 8 cents per mile for using the highways.
Wow, I don't see any citizens anywhere going for that, do you?
No, I would find it very hard to believe that anyone would say, that's a great idea. How come we're not doing it?
Yes.
I'm not for it either. So.
Especially in Missouri. I know one of your bills got passage through the Senate, and that was a bill that you have put forward that would raise the age barrier to 18 years old, at least 18, to be imprisoned in an adult prison in Missouri.
Yes, that was a big event. It's kind of captured the news here lately in several editorials or columns, and I was kind of the featured, you know, legislator of the week with that bill, because it raises the age to 18 and then reduces the number of youth in the adult system. And my bill had actually three goals: to save our youth, because youth in the juvenile justice system have access to therapy and rehabilitation versus when they go to adult prison, where they learn criminal behavior. I always say the adult prisons are the graduate school for criminal behavior, and we don't want that to happen. And of course, numerous studies have shown that the brain isn't fully developed till you're about 25 years old, and particularly the younger you are, like these young youth, the teenagers, don't really think about consequences, you know, when they do something. In fact, I know when my son did something I thought was kind of stupid, I'd say, why did you do that? And he said, gee, Dad, I don't know. Well, he was telling me the truth because the brain didn't really think that way. So in the, you know, our juvenile justice system, which is a model around the whole United States, they refer to it as the, you know, Missouri model, and even won awards from Harvard in that. They work directly with the youth to, you know, receive mental health, because a lot of these youth already have trauma in their life, and that's how they ended up this way. They have trauma, and a lot of them have mental health issues. So in our Department of Youth Services, you know, they're, of course, held accountable. You know, we can all agree that breaking the law is wrong, and that these teens deserve to face the consequences for their actions, but we don't want to destroy their life, you know, into the future. So we're, the juvenile justice system's equipped to help the youth become members productive. They learn critical skills, finish their schooling, they're more prepared to live productive and healthy lives and become law-abiding citizens. And when they do that, then they get a job and, you know, get families and contribute to the, you know, our income tax system. So it saves the youth. It gives us more money because now they're tax-paying citizens. And then, of course, it actually makes Missouri safer because they're less likely to recidivate, because youth and adult jails are 36 times more likely to recidivate than their peers in the juvenile justice system. So there's only 5 states that haven't raised the age to 18. They're Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, South Carolina, and us. So if we raise the age to 18 after it goes through the House, then there'll only be 4 states. And I think those 4 states are even working on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, tell us about the hemp bill that you thought was a good idea this week.
Well, that was another great bill that came out. I don't know if your listeners know much about hemp, but it's a very unique product because every part of the plant has some utility and potential market value. It's seed is rich in oil and has healthy protein, and it actually can help heal the soil and restore depleted nutrients and minerals in our, that are needed in our farmlands today. So this industrial hemp pilot program, which is Senate Bill 547, is going to be kind of studying hemp to see if we want to go forward with it full scale. Now, if this legislation is approved, Missouri would be the 35th state to approve hemp, because now U.S. farmers are finally able to take part in that thriving market because of the new federal farm bill. So 34 other states have approved legislation, and 19 states are already producing industrial hemp. So right now there's more than 25,000 acres of hemp grown in those 19 states. 32 universities have already conducted research on that. And it's interesting to know that our U.S. Constitution and our original paper money were all printed on hemp paper because of its durability of fibers. Now, a lot of the controversy arises around, you know, the, you know, producing a high effect, but under this program, if any industrial hemp contains an average of THC concentration, which causes that high, exceeding 0.3%, then the Department of Agriculture, which will run the program, can seize the crop and destroy it. A nice thing for the environmentalists out there, the concern about climate change, hemp uses more carbon than it actually produces. So it can help heal the soil and restore farmed out nutrients and minerals, because it's actually one of the best nitrogen fixers that are available out there. And the products that can come from hemp are just phenomenal. Tens of thousands of products can be produced using industrial hemp, like clothing and biofuels and plastic, personal care, feed and food. Because hemp is rich in a source of omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, and it's also an excellent source of dietary fiber and protein. So that by itself, you'd say, wow, this sounds like a pretty good deal. Well, it even goes beyond that, because there's a product called Hempcrete, and that's used to build houses. It's non-toxic, so the people that have allergies and can't be around fresh paint or glue or carpet that's been installed because it still has that smell to it. It's non-toxic and very important in this day and age with mold coming more to the forefront of things. It's resistant to mold and insects and fire. So this is going to be great. So we will be able to issue permits that are valid for 3 years. If you violate any of this process, the penalty, of course, you'd lose your registration, but you could also be fined from anywhere from $2,500 to $50,000. But we're going to go slow. The permits are going to be for plots of land only between 10 or 40 acres and not over 2,000 acres of land statewide. So I think this could open up some great doors. Certainly our farmers were going to like this as another crop that they could use to, you know, help their income. So Senate Bill 547 will now head to the House, and we'll see if Missouri is going to become the 35th state to use industrial hemp.
All right. I know that it is a different issue, but it's certainly related. What's your stance on medical marijuana usage?
You know, I've studied that quite a bit, Chad, because initially I wasn't in favor of it, and I'm certainly not in favor of recreational marijuana. But the more I study medical marijuana, the more I lean towards, I think we should go that route. I mean, when you think about it, you know, we use about every plant and animal around the world to help do that. But we don't, you know, do it with marijuana because of, you know, the high that's associated with the marijuana and smoking it. But medical marijuana is a lot different. They don't use the THC part in there. They use the cannabis oils. And they make oils to put on your hands for arthritis. If you smoke it, you don't get that high like you would on recreational marijuana. And particularly, and this is one of the things I've really researched for our youth, you know, there's a lot of young people out there that, you know, have, you know, autism. And it's, I know families that have kids with autism. In fact, one of my nieces and nephews have that, but it's only a mild format, so they can treat it very lightly. They wouldn't need to use medical marijuana. But there's children out there that, I mean, they just are violent. You know, they can't be around other people. They destroy things. Some of them can't even talk or say words. You know, their parents are put in a situation that's just unbearable. I couldn't even imagine being a parent with a child like that. And Israel, surprisingly, is the country that has done the most research on this. This is probably the medical marijuana capital of the world. And they've done extensive research to these very violent autistic children that, you know, like I say, some can't even speak, and they, you know, injure themselves, you know, head banging and things like that. And suddenly this medical marijuana helps. And so I think I'm a believer now of medical marijuana under certain circumstances. But on medical marijuana, it wants to be the thing of last resort. Go ahead and try every other source of drug first before they went to the medical marijuana part.
You know, just to let people know, I usually ask you before interviews some items that you'd like to talk about, but I spring stuff on you during our interview too that we don't cover before we go on the air. And rarely do I ever ask you anything, even in that circumstance, that you haven't already researched. So a tip of the cap to you on that.
Well, I love researching issues. I have 44 three-ring binders with every topic possible, imaginable in there. I'm an extensive reader. I go through two highlighters a week reading not only the bills but my additional research.
We've heard from some Democratic legislators over the past few weeks, and they have stated that they'd just as soon that Governor Greitens stay in office, because they feel like if that happens, the Republicans won't be able to get anything done. What do you have? I'm sure you've probably heard that notion around the State House. How do you react to that?
I have heard that, and so far, because this is, well, if you remember, this came out after his State of the State, after he gave that on that Wednesday in January, then all this news came out. So it's been a while now, because it's been about 2 months, because this is already the 9th of March, and I haven't seen that effect yet at all. So if it hasn't happened yet, I doubt it'll happen in the next, because we have, about 2 months left in there, because we end up in the middle of May. So I don't think that is a factor. I think we'll get a lot of legislation done. And quite frankly, and I'm speaking for my Democratic friends in the Senate, they have good legislation, and they want to see it, passed, because it's going to help their constituents and the people of the state of Missouri. So they certainly don't want to just shut down the Senate as some sort of punishment, because they will suffer from that as well, because now there's legislation that could help their constituents that won't get passed. So, it was certainly an interesting theory to, look at, but based on the past 2 months, I don't think that'll be a factor.
Wayne, thanks for your time. Always good to catch up with you.
Always enjoy talking to you, Chad.
Wayne Wallingford, 27th District Senator from Cape Girardeau, joining us on this legislative interview on Regional Radio.